south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. This show will be the first one for 2016, going out on January 1st, which means in exactly a week's time, my January 2016 Expat Insider Seminar will be underway, and for you very last-minute types, you can still get in. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's 2016 seminar link to read up on the event and sign up. And you know, it seems like with a lot of my seminars, people sign up at the very last minute, sometimes even signing up one day before the event. And though you might think it has to do with a severe case of indecision, procrastination, or even mañana time, nope. Some people plan it that way because, you see, at the very last minute, certain airlines offer very special deals and standby deals so you can save a few $100. Though I understand hooking up with those deals is not for the faint of heart. In fact, I remember one person told me that he got a round-trip ticket from L.A. for around $400 complete, though there were two layovers, I think one in Houston and one in Guadalajara. But still, $400 compared to the average round-trip rate, which is around $500 to $650. And believe me, that extra savings can buy a lot of tropical drinks with little umbrellas in them. Not to mention a lot of cases of tequila and who knows how many Cuban cigars. That said, now for some more disheartening news from Big Brother. That means the U.S. State Department. Here's an article that was sent to me by a lot of listeners, entitled, "The U.S. State Department makes new changes to American passports." Now, if you're not much of a traveler and your passport sits as just another ornament along with those 50 or so old cell phone rechargers in the junk drawer in the kitchen, this won't make much difference to you. But if your aim is truly to become an expat or just want to get the hell out of Big Brother country once in a while, this really will make a difference. It's just another roadblock that the U.S. is putting up to keep their sheep in line. Mostly to keep track of U.S. citizens who've been out of the country a long, long time. It looks like for some of us, they think the leash is way too long and they want to pull it in a little tighter. And for this breaking news, let me thank one of my early seminar attendees, Rory, for sending me the very first blurb on this. It starts by saying, "The heavy hand of the U.S. State Department will be making changes to the supplemental insert pages for American passports as of January 1st. Beginning with the new year, the U.S. State Department announced they will no longer be inserting the 24-page supplement into passports that are almost filled completely with stamps." Then it says, "The decision to discontinue the service was made to enhance the security of passports and to abide by the international passport standards," according to the U.S. State Department. The change, they said, has been in the works for some time and is not related to recent terror attacks, but, they said, related to security factors and general vigilance. Yeah, right. Then it says, "Back in October 2014, the State Department began issuing 52-page passports for certain applicants outside of the U.S. And beginning the first day of the new year, applicants inside the U.S. will be able to apply for either the 28-page or 52-page passport. According to a government statement, requests for the additional 24-page inserts for valid U.S. passports will only be accepted till December 2015. So I guess we all missed that window, huh? All right, what does that mean? Now, if you take a look at your own passport, you'll see if you enter a country, you'll have to exit that country, so you'll get two stamps. And for the next country you enter, you'll get an entry and an exit stamp too. So, for example, if you're flying from Panama to Cancun, Mexico, you'll get four stamps, which will fill one whole passport page. Each one of those stamps is about a quarter page in size, which means every time you take a trip and come back to or through another country, one whole page in your passport's used. If you have a 28-page passport, that means you can go in and out of 56 countries, right? Two for each page. Nope, that's wrong. You can only go in and out of 40 countries, and that's over a period of 10 years. That's how long current passports are valid. Oh, and by the way, in some of the countries I've been in South America and Africa and stuff, they've got a stamp that takes up half of your passport page, so you can only get two stamps on one page. Cool, huh? And those stamps really tend to use up your pages fast. And by the way, in most countries, if you happen to stay even one day past the usual 90-day tourist visa, you'll have to pay a small fine per day, usually $1 to $3 in Latin America. But they'll stamp your passport with a stamp that covers a whole page saying that you stayed too long and that you're in violation of the visa and all that. No big deal, but it steals a whole page on your passport. How do I know that? Well, I've been guilty of that myself. So even in the best of circumstances, if you prorate a 10-year passport, you can only on average go in and out of 4 foreign countries a year. So why is that? In a 28-page passport, the first 7 pages are all filled up with your data and government warnings and other junk. You don't actually start getting entrance and exit stamps until page 8. Now, that means, and this has happened to me, if you end up in, for example, South America, Central America, Asia, or Africa on a 2 or 3 month tour, you definitely will fill up that passport, or nearly fill it, and have to go to the nearest embassy to get a 28-page insert, which you won't be able to get now. Instead, you'll have to get a brand new passport. Now, of course, there'll be more pages in it. They say there'll be 52 pages now. But it's really all about checking in so they can find out where you are and what you've been up to. And if you remember from a show I did maybe a year or so ago, when you apply for that new passport, they've added about 25 brand new intrusive questions to the passport application, including things like, what hospital were you born in? What's the address? Who was attending when you were born? Where did your parents live at that time? And what was the address? You get the idea. You practically have to lie or at least fudge a little on stuff like that, because who can remember all that stuff? Maybe your mom or maybe your dad. But you, being slightly more advanced than an embryo, certainly don't remember a thing. And if you do, it wasn't pleasant. After all, someone slapped you and then you cried a lot, right? Now, the fact is, I've spoken to a couple of embassy people myself, people on the inside. They say that if in the future there's any kind of necessary roundup to be going on, and Big Brother in the States is looking to lasso people who are out of the country, all they've got to do is dig up those passport forms, find an error or two, and there's going to be a few obvious ones if you check into it. And then, as it says on the bottom of the passport form, any false statements made on this form can result in fines, imprisonment, and revocation of your passport. And if you think I'm sounding paranoid here, I've heard it from the horse's mouth. Someone who works right inside an American consulate. Oh, and another thing. Suppose you're stuck in, let's say, Germany when all your passport pages are used, and now that you can't get that insert, you have to apply for a new passport. You think you're going to be able to do that in one day, 2 days, a week? Try 3 weeks to a month, maybe more, depending on holidays and the fact that you have to go online now to get any kind of consulate appointments to do such things, such as apply for a new passport. So basically what this new rule is all about is to keep track of all those people, those expats who've been out of the country a long, long time. They want to know where you hang out, where you live, what you look like now, because you'll get some new photos taken, right? And by the way, when you walk in that embassy, you're being captured on about 47 ultra-high-resolution cameras, too. So basically, the rope is tightening, and it's going to get worse. Guess what the next step is going to be? Well, you might have been reading about this stuff yourself, maybe not. The U.S. consulate guy told me there are two things in the works that will come to pass shortly. One, a national passport or identity card that you have to use when traveling from state to state in the U.S. Now, he says the public's not going to like that, and no politician's going to ever bring it up. However, when the next big terrorist attack hits within U.S. borders, probably a false flag, or a supposed large terrorist attack that was thwarted by Homeland Security, through their amazing talents and superhuman efforts, that's how the dunderhead media boys will play it anyway, that's when the U.S. State Department will throttle the traveling public even more. In fact, many American morons might actually demand a national ID card for traveling purposes. Why? For security reasons, of course. And the second way they'll tighten the noose, passports will no longer be issued for 10 years. 5 years will be the limit. Again, for, quote, national security reasons. Come on, didn't you learn in civics class that all morons and couch potatoes have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of Budweiser? Or something like that. So what's that mean for all you gonna-bes and wannabes up there? For one thing, there's not a lot of time left. You've got to get off the fence. Come down, get residency in a foreign country, preferably a third world Latin country, because they are easiest to get residency in, at least for now. Which will put you on track to getting a second citizenship and passport. But believe me, those avenues are closing fast too. Let me give you an example. Traditionally, in most land countries, you get your temporary residency first. You wait a year or 2 years to get your permanent residency. And after 5 years or so, you can apply for citizenship and passport. And in many instances, you can skip the temporary residency and go right to permanent and save yourself a year or two. Now, of course, every country is slightly different, but you can count on the fact that when you get your permanent residency, most of the time, you can get your citizenship in 5 years or so. However, note that not all residency programs lead to a final citizenship and passport. Belize is one of the countries that does not allow that. And in many Latin countries, if you get a pensionado residency, that means you're coming as a retired person, many of those programs do not lead to a permanent citizenship and passport. That's the case, for example, with the pensionado programs in Panama. But listen to this recent development now. In the Dominican Republic, the DR, it used to be quite easy to get your temporary and permanent residency if you were a person from the States or the First World, and it led to a passport in 5 years. However, listen to this from a company called TDV Immigration, an online provider of citizen and residency opportunities. Now, I'm not endorsing them. I'm just telling you what kind of problems they're having right now with residency and people trying to get passports. They're expediters for such things and are running into some problems now. By the way, if you've been listening to this program for quite a while, you know, I personally never recommend immigration services over the internet. Instead, I always recommend come down, get your boots on the ground, and hook up with a local lawyer or tramitador. That's what they're called down here. Tramitador. That would be a paperwork expediter. It'll always be much, much cheaper than doing anything through a service that's on the net. Why? Because if you find people that do such things on the net, especially English speakers, those will be gringos setting up those web pages and expecting their cut and gringo prices. For example, in Guatemala, you go to a Latin lawyer there, you'll pay maybe $1,500 to $2,000 to get your Guatemalan residency, either temporary or permanent. However, I've seen some residency and citizenship expediters on the internet, like the ones I just mentioned, and I see one right here, I'm looking at it right now, that charges $8,500 to get Guatemalan residency. And of course, you'll have to fly down and stop at the immigration office at least twice to sign paperwork and stuff. So then you have to add a couple grand and some time off to that charge. You're looking at maybe minimally $10,000 or $12,000. However, you come down, get your boots on the ground, you'll pay $1,500, and then because you're down already, you'll only have to come back one more time. So figure it out. You'll save $5,000 to $7,000 doing it that way. Now, according to Expat Eddies, he claims, depending on your party preferences and peculiarities, that kind of extra dough could buy you anywhere from 2 weeks to a lifetime's worth of umbrella drinks. But seriously, the money you save by coming down and getting boots on the ground will pay for both of your trips down to Latin America to get that residency stuff done. But where was I? Oh yeah, talking about TDV Immigration Services, a net provider of residency and citizenship opportunities. Now, just last month, one of their legal operatives was quoted as saying, "We've seen countries worldwide clamping down on allowing foreigners to get residency and citizenship. In fact, over the last few years, the Dominican Republic has gone from requiring a residency to citizenship process of 3 years to then changing it to 4 years. Then last year, 7, and now it takes an 8-year residency requirement for citizenship. And it looks like sooner or later, they'll do away with it altogether." And when some top immigration lawyers on the island were asked, "Why is this so?" they responded, "It's all due to pressure from the U.S. government." How do you like that? So what does that mean? The U.S. government does not want its sheep to become residents of foreign countries, especially when that residency process leads to a passport and citizenship. Why? Because with another passport, if there's any trouble on the horizon with Uncle Sam, you can flip him the bird and be on your merry way. But that's not all. TDV Immigration sources stated, quote, "We've seen countries freeze their immigration naturalization process even in recent months." Then the spokesman said, "The only clients our company is currently accepting, people who are sure to have success with immigration and naturalization in a foreign land, are what you would call extremely wealthy persons. And we're presently receiving a flood of millionaire and billionaire clients in the Middle East, practically offering any amount of money if we can get them residency and citizenship outside of the Middle East. Unfortunately," he said, "the demand has exploded and the supply has practically been frozen." Then he added, "There are still a few options of foreign residency and naturalization available to the non-wealthy, but I would advise people to proceed immediately. It seems like the options for middle class and even upper middle class people are running out permanently. So what does that mean? Well, it's easy to see that in the very near future, the wealthy need only apply. So once again, what are you waiting for? Meanwhile, in a real schizophrenic twist, Mexico has announced in all of its media and Spanish language newspapers that it's tightening controls at the American border to stem the tide of so-called U.S. criminal types and the newest surge of North Americans who've been flooding into Mexico. How about that? Mexican officials have been saying, get this, it's causing, for Mexico, a major illegal first world immigrant problem. Yeah, right, like Mexico couldn't use a reverse brain drain like that. So anyway, they're worried now that Americans are staying as undocumented illegals in Mexico. Now, of course, you know where that idiotic Mexican government rhetoric sprung from, right? Give you one guess. Retaliation against Trump. Oh, and by the way, as far as your U.S. passport's concerned, if you look at page 7, point 11, it says, register with the U.S. Embassy. When you're visiting a foreign country for a prolonged stay, traveling to remote or volatile areas, or residing overseas, do register with the U.S. Embassy or consulate by telephone, fax, or in person, or register online through the department's registration homepage at travelregistration.states.gov, etc., etc. Now, what's my opinion on that?
You gotta be shitting me.
What the f***? Well, you don't have to believe me or Tony Soprano, but it's pretty much unanimous among free-thinking, intelligent expats that you never go to a U.S. consulate or embassy unless you absolutely have to. Now, don't get me wrong. There are a lot of expats down here in Latin America, and some are lukewarm and brain-dead. So, there is a difference of opinion amongst expats. Some do believe every bit of propaganda the U.S. and the U.S. media vomits out. And some idiot expats will stop in at the U.S. embassy just to say, hey. And what kind of people would do such an idiotic thing? Well, if you happen to be down here on some kind of government contract, for one, for example, if you're an embassy worker or military attaché, then you're all in because you're a parasite sucking off the government trough. And that's also true if you're one of those brain-dead expat flag wavers often found on the gringo tourist trail, the type who get genuinely excited when they cast their absentee ballots for lying crooks up in the States. Yes, there are always small cadres of lobotomized expats who love rubbing shoulders at embassy gigs and hoop it up at Republicans and Democrats abroad. Then, of course, you've got those do-gooders building solar outhouses for Jesus. Though you can almost forgive them for flag-waving and kissing up to the U.S. Like you can forgive an orangutan at the zoo for openly scratching its privates. Now, those are the morons that look at U.S. consulates and embassies as their friendly tether/lifeline to the U.S. And I'm not talking about the orangutans. And reason number 4,226, why being off the gringo tourist trail is the place to be. Okay, since we're talking about residency and passports, remember a couple of weeks ago I was mentioning that new law that says if you owe the IRS more than $50,000, they can revoke or block your passport? After I hit on that distressing subject, I got emails. Some that put an even nastier twist on it. Now, first let me mention once again now, if you live out of the U.S. for 330 days or more, you get that fantastic $100,800 foreign earned income tax exemption. In other words, if you're making money in a foreign country, you get up to $100,800 of that exempt from U.S. federal and state taxes. And in some cases, you don't even have to pay FICA. It's all legal, and we explain exactly how to go about that if you come down to the seminar. Now, because so many long-term expats have taken advantage of that foreign earned income tax exemption, a lot of expats who have paid no taxes year over year just quit filing. Why bother to file taxes if you make under that $100,800 limit because you don't have to pay anyway? Well, let me read this little excerpt of an email I just received, and I'll paraphrase this from an article he sent. This is Ralph, and he starts by saying, Johnny, some tax experts read this new law to mean that the IRS can revoke your passport if you owe back taxes of $50,000 or more, or have unfiled tax returns, even if you don't owe any money. That's because failure to file a return typically results in returns being prepared by the IRS computers on your behalf. No human intervention or review is required. Let's say you've been living in Latin America a long time and you've been making well under the $100,800 tax exemption limit and you pay no tax. So you just decide, not to file taxes anymore. Well, oftentimes because you've been in the computer for many years and have been filing, and suddenly you don't, more often than not, an IRS computer will simply print out a report showing that their processes were followed correctly, and they'll assess you estimated taxes. Thus, the computer will say you now owe money. No need to prove their case in court, get a judgment, no order from a judge, as required in all other civil offenses. No need for the IRS to send you a notice saying they're going to audit your file or even telephone you, the taxpayer, to ask for an explanation because it's all done by computer these days. If the computer says you owe money, your passport can be revoked or refused. So let's say you're living abroad and haven't filed your tax return for a year or two or three because in the past you never had to pay any taxes at all. You fell under the limit. Well, here's the rub. In some cases, and you'll never know which ones, IRS computers can generate what are called substitute for returns, called SFRs in IRS speak. These SFRs are prepared on your behalf using whatever data the computer has based on past returns and who knows what else. The SFRs will be prepared with zero deductions for you and zero exemptions or expenses to offset that rate. In fact, the balance due from a substitute for return SFR is always higher than if you had prepared the tax return yourself. And once the SFR is entered into the system, a notice is mailed to your last known address informing you of the amount due. And if you're out of the country, you probably will never respond to that notice because you didn't get it. And then after some months, another notice will come called ACP-504, which is sent by certified mail. If you don't contest this bill in tax court within 30 days, the amount becomes final and due and payable in full. So if you're not home or not at your last address or no one's picking up your mail, you will have a tax due whether you know it or not. So then after that 30 days, the IRS can now certify the debt and file a tax lien and revoke your passport. No matter you never received any of the letters, their only obligation is to mail the notices to your last known address using traditional U.S. mail. If you've moved or your letters never reached you because you are abroad, that's your problem. The IRS will not search for you or call you at this stage in the process. So again, from time to time, people living abroad who assume they don't need to file returns if their income is under that foreign earned income exclusion amount, that's $100,800 for 2015, many of these Americans abroad often think they are not required to file. They feel no sense of urgency because once the forms are in, no taxes will be due. So why spend the money on tax preparation? So no matter how many times in the past you filed and paid no taxes, the IRS will not give you credit for that foreign earned income exemption if you fail to file in the future and they prepare one of those SFRs, that so-called substitute for an unfiled tax return. Now, here are some other examples of erroneous tax debts that are frequently certified by the IRS and thus become an unpaid tax debt to you. Let's say you're living in the U.S. and recently moved. You forgot to inform the IRS of the move. Someone files a report of income, a 1099, W-2, or K-1, in your name at the old address. If you've already filed your tax returns, the IRS will send you a notice of proposed changes. If you fail to respond to this letter, the change will be made and the tax debt created. Again, it doesn't matter if you participated in the process or had knowledge of what was going on or not. And finally, here's a case that will most certainly affect some expats, and they'll never know about it until it's too late, like when you get your passport revoked. First, note this. There were almost 2 million suspected tax identity thefts in 2013. This compares to about 500,000 tax identity thefts in 2010, according to the Treasury Tax Inspector General. Meaning, tax identity theft is dramatically on the rise. So then what's tax identity theft? Well, this applies to someone whose identity has been stolen. Almost always by, guess who? Illegal Latin American aliens. And here's how it works. Illegal aliens come to the U.S. and go to a local fake document expediter. They use someone else's real social security number to get that illegal alien a job and some supporting secondary paperwork. So then, the worker gets paid under your social security with zero withholding and a W-2 is issued tied to your account and the IRS comes after you for the taxes owed. Now, if you're living in a foreign country, you're never going to know that. Now, typically, illegal aliens who steal these social security numbers claim about 20 dependents, so there's no withholding, no money paid to the IRS for taxes due against the wages earned. It'll take years for the IRS to come after you. So, with interest and penalties added to the balance, you'll see the $50,000 limit is a very low threshold. So, a tax debt that involves identity theft is created and certified without taxpayers having any idea what's happening. And it's estimated that in 2015, that's happened over 2 million times. So, how do you straighten it out? Well, it takes months and months of hard work to unwind. Work that can only begin after you find out there's a problem. Now, it's possible that the first you might hear about this debt is when you're forced to return to the U.S. because your passport has been revoked, and thus your reputation destroyed too. And remember, if this happens and you don't have a second passport or at least residency in a foreign country, there is no right to an appeal, to speak with an attorney, plead your case to a judge in your country, nor is there any way to stop the airport from sending you back to face the IRS in court. However, if you have another valid travel document, you are not going to be in legal limbo. You will have rights and recourse. And typically, the IRS will revoke your passport while you are in transit. They know when you're flying from one country to another because computers at airports are all interconnected, and they will revoke your passport while you are in the air. And you'll be held in the transit area under guard until being put on a next flight to the U.S. They did that to Edward Snowden, and Putin came to his rescue, but you will be headed back to the U.S. to face the IRS. So if you do not have another valid travel document, your only choice is to return to your home country because you will now be an illegal alien at whatever airport you're in when this happens. However, if you have another passport, it's a completely different story. Suppose you're in a country that's not the U.S. and you go to the airport and try to fly out, and you find your passport's been blocked. And what if the country you're in at the time attempts to side with the U.S. and denies you entry? If you got a second passport, you can pick a flight departing to any country that allows visa-free travel on your second passport. And what most people don't know is that many, many Latin American passports allow visa-free travel to most Latin countries and many first world countries too. So even, for example, if you have a Honduran, Nicaraguan, Salvadorian, Guatemalan, Peruvian, or Paraguayan passport, you're not going to be stuck living in or flying to third world backwaters. Generally, most Latin passports offer visa-free travel to 100 or so countries.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.